And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a new episode of the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for serious hockey fans. Of course, I'm Michael Lindenbaum, but you don't care about me. You care about who's on the show this week. And ladies and gentlemen, our TXHT Toronto Maple Leafs writer, we have Steve Gartner.
How's it going?
And a very faint background sound that we heard Steve say hello. And of course, making his return, we haven't had him on since the NWHL Isabel Cup Championship game. It's our good friend, Nate Oliver from the Hockey Writers. Nate, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here from beautiful downtown Buffalo.
Yeah, it's a little different since, you know, the last time you were on, we were filming in between periods at the NWHL game for the Isabel Cup. So,
yes.
This is less hectic.
Very much so.
But let's jump right into it with you, Nate, real quick. Steve, feel free to chime in if you got any questions for Nate. But last night, something big happened with the Buttes. But before we go into that, why don't you talk about what the Buttes did during the offseason leading up to the point to where they are now?
Sure. I think when the season got underway or throughout the offseason, all indications were that Buffalo was going to steamroll the league this year. And the reason why that came about is they went both barrels blazing with their offseason signings. They brought in Shannon Zabados is a netminder for the team who is arguably the greatest female goaltender to ever play hockey. Is a three-time Olympian in her early 30s. She's 33 and is now playing in her first NWHL season. So you make a huge signing like that. In addition to her, you've got three Team USA gold medalists from Pyeongchang Games just this past winter, Emily Falzer, Danny Camaronesi, and Nicole Hensley. And then the Buttes had already had for two seasons prior a U.S. Olympic silver medalist from Vancouver, Lisa Chesson. So you have all those Olympians right there. On top of that, they bring in a trio of three rookies, Annika Zaleski from Colgate, Savannah Harmon from Clarkson, and Jules Iafallo from Ohio State University. And all three of those ladies were in the Frozen Four during their senior season for their teams, were the captains of their teams. So all these elite signings took shape during the offseason, in addition to bringing back some returning veterans, some of whom were members of the Isabel Cup-winning Buttes from 2017. And they put together a chock-full huge amount of talent, and that was done through the guidance of Nick Faddy, who was a general manager at the time this offseason.
Now, going into that, in the middle of the season, or at the maybe like the quarter mark of the season, the Buffalo Buttes did something drastic, and that was the changing of their head coaches. Why don't you talk about that for a little bit?
For sure. And that, I think, surprised a lot of us. This season, they were serving as head coach and assistant coach, and I'm talking about Rick Seeling, was the team's head coach, and Craig Muni, three-time Stanley Cup champion, Craig Muni was the team's assistant coach. Now, the year prior, they had done it as more of a co-coaching tandem, but they were, you know, here are these coaches that have won. They won the Isabel Cup with the Buttes in 2017. That was Muni's first year with the team. Rick Seeling was an original. I mean, he'd been with the Buttes since day one as their head coach. And then he was an assistant general manager. Then he took over the duties as head coach and general manager. And last season, he did both again. He was the head coach and the general manager. So Rick Seeling, you know, he played in the NHL for a long stretch, too, with the Buffalo Sabres and then also the Detroit Red Wings. He's here from day one. Every single season that the NWHL has been in effect, he's taken the Buttes to the Isabel Cup final. No other team in the short history of the league has been able to do that. And quite suddenly, almost a month ago, about a month and a day ago, Coach Seeling and Coach Muni were relieved of their duties by the Buttes general manager, Nick Faddy, and were replaced with another former Buffalo Sabre, Cody McCormick, who also played for the Minnesota Wild and the Colorado Avalanche. And so Cody has been filling in, or has been covering the duties of head coach since that happened. But it was a huge shocker. It's how do you let go of a coach who's led his team to the final three seasons in a row in the only three seasons of existence for the league, let alone an assistant coach who's a three-time Stanley Cup champion with those great Edmonton Oilers teams. So definitely very shocking in and around Buffalo and league-wide for that matter.
Yeah, and then, of course, it all accumulated to what happened last night, or for everyone who's listening, because it's Saturday for the release, and we're recording this on a Wednesday, so this is still very fresh. Last night, the general manager stepped down, but the way we found out was not your normal way of finding out.
No, that in and of itself was quite shocking. So the story broke probably about 5 or 6 p.m. Last night. It was tweeted out by John Vogel, who's a writer for The Athletic. And John Vogel is a big name in Buffalo. He was with the Buffalo News for many years and a well-respected writer locally. But he tweeted out that GM Faddy had resigned from his position and was going to focus more on working on a brewery that he owns in the Western New York area. More recently, breweries have gotten big in Buffalo, and it's kind of the latest and the greatest thing in our city. And that was news right there that Mr. Faddy, who owns one, wanted to spend more time being involved with that and kind of balancing out other aspects of his life. I know that he does have young kids and continues to be involved in hockey, but he is no longer the general manager for the Buffalo Buttes. So that move in of itself, it was maybe even more shocking than the release of coaches Seeling and Muni. Nobody really expected this, especially since this team was very much Nick Faddy's orchestration. He was really leading the charge with all the signings and bringing in the big names like Zabidas and Hensley. So this has really kind of come out of left field.
Yeah. Now, has anyone, or have you heard of anyone taking over the general manager position since that's happened?
No, and that's been kind of confusing, I would say, not only for the media, but for just those who follow the team locally here in Buffalo. So normally when a change like this is taking shape with the team, there will be an official media release that comes out from the Buttes organization. Of course, the Buttes are owned by Pegula Sports and Entertainment, the same organization that owns the Buffalo Sabres, the Buffalo Bills, and the Buffalo Bandits. So obviously, you know, it's a very professional organization, and they kind of set the standard for how professional sports is run and operated. So this has been a little surprising that at least to this point, there has been no official release or official notice from Pegula Sports or from the Buttes. First of all, announcing that, yes, this is official, Mr. Faddy is no longer the general manager. But then furthermore from that, who is the interim or who is the replacement general manager for him? So kind of a state of limbo right now in terms of the management part of the Buttes.
Now, going back to when Seeling and Muni were let go, that was done the night before the Buttes played a game.
Yes.
And now they're dealing with this literally like in the middle of the week before they go into another big game for themselves. What impact that you've noticed has this had on the players?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because I would say that the players have handled it superbly. You know, when going back to the Muni and the Seeling firings and them being relieved of duties, the Buttes responded. They really seemed to come forward and do well under Cody McCormick's coaching. And he had some closeness with the team prior to being inserted into that role. We were told by Nick Faddy at the time that Coach McCormick worked with the players closely off the ice and doing some training and workouts and things like that. So it wasn't as if he was totally unfamiliar with the players. So he was able to pick up rather quickly, and they strung a record after Muni and Seeling were let go. they have three wins and just a single loss. They lost a tight one in the dying seconds of play to Minnesota, but they defeated the Connecticut Whale. They beat Minnesota in their follow-up game less than 24 hours later, and then they came out this past weekend and blitzed the Boston Pride and have really taken charge. Now, with the news of General Manager Faddy being let go, I was actually at the rink last night and spoke to a few of the players, not about that. By that point, I wasn't aware of the change that happened at General Manager, but so I can only guess whether the players were aware or not. I would have to guess that they probably were not, but I spoke with some veteran players on the team and a couple of the rookies too, and they're very upbeat about where they are in the season. They admit that maybe it was a bit of a slow start, or the record that they had was not what was anticipated. But they're 6-4 right now through the first 10 games of the season. They're keeping it pretty tight, and, you know, business is normal. Whatever happens with management, yes, it has an impact on the players, but it's not what is dictating their focus and their level of play. You know, and maybe that speaks a bit to the caliber of these players being Olympians, being proven NCAA players, is that they face adversity before and they face challenges before. So changes in management, changes with the team, although maybe not ideal, is certainly not anything that's going to hinder them per se.
Now, you mentioned one team that has been essentially blitzing the league, and that has been the Minnesota Whitecaps. What impact has that team made on the NWHL?
Well, I think you want to see, especially with the fact that we know that, yes, although this is the Whitecaps' first season in the NWHL, they're an organization that has been established for quite some time. I mean, they've been around for nearly a decade, and the players on that squad, they, you know, they have their share of Olympians too. Lee Steckelin is arguably the best defender in the league right now, and one of the best defenders in the world. And then, you know, they have some veteran players like Winnie Brott Brown. I mean, here's a lady that's playing the game. I mean, she's 40 years old, and she's playing in the NWHL with players in their early 20s. So the fact that they came in their first season in the league and they've been such a huge success, this is what you want. I mean, you don't want a new team to come in and just get steamrolled by the other squads. You want it to be competitive, and you want the game to grow and this league to grow. So the fact that they've come in, they have been either at the top or right around the top of the standings all season long and are just stringing together the wins, it's great for the league and great for them too. And I, you know, how can you not? You sign a goaltender like Amanda Levier, who's the reigning goaltender of the year in the NWHL. I mean, right there, that alone puts you in good standings. And then to bring in some perennial Whitecaps players that had been with the organization before they came into the NWHL, that's huge too, because they know the town, they know the organization, they have close-knittedness and tightness with one another, and they know what they're doing. And it's obviously translated to the how they've been able to produce on the ice.
And one team that was the steamroller for the first at least two seasons in the league, the Boston Pride, how do you think they're faring so far this season?
You know, it's funny. You don't usually refer to a dark horse. When you're talking about a dark horse, you don't really think of it as being a team that's at the top of the standings. But I don't think that Boston has gotten a fair shake as to how solid and how good they are this season. All the focus was on Buffalo. And after that, I would say the focus was on the Minnesota Whitecaps. Right now, Boston and the Whitecaps are tied at the top of the standings with records of 7-3. And, you know, to Boston's credit, I think they got a bit of a raw deal in terms of, you know, how much attention was being paid for them. But don't forget, I mean, you know, that roster in and of itself, when you think of players like Jordan Smelker and Brittany Ott, you know, ones like that, Alyssa Gagliardi, that not only have they been around since the beginning of the NWHL, but many of them played in the CWHL before the NWHL even took shape and are Clarkson Cup champions. So the majority of those players have been together for a good solid stretch. They won the first Isabel Cup in the inaugural season of the NWHL. So, you know, shame on anybody that maybe doubted them or didn't give them the proper respect that they deserve. But as the season's gone along, if they've been overlooked at all, they're certainly making it up with wins and just the way that they performed on the ice.
Do you think the Boston Pride will ever select just one jersey and go with it? Four seasons, four different uniforms.
Yeah, it depends on the eye of the beholder. So I'm maybe more of a traditionalist personally, and I'm not really big on change. And you know, it's tough when you know jerseys are expensive. So you know, you want to have the latest, and you want to get ones for you know your favorite player. And if it's a player like a Jordan Smeltker who's been with the team all along, or a Brittany Ott, you know, you want to have their jersey and hope that it's going to last for a while. But if it's changing it each season, I don't know. It depends on how much you're willing to spend and willing to cash out. But yeah, it would be great if they maybe stuck with a jersey that, you know, they really believed in and kind of got behind as being their emblem for their hockey club. Except for Minnesota, because they're the newest team, I have an NWHL jersey for each of the four original clubs, and you know they're cool to have no matter what the current emblem or logo might be.
Yeah, we're obviously both jersey collectors, and I agree with you there. That's why I made the joke about the Pride, because I only got two of the original four. I have Nana Fujimoto for the Riveters, and I have Haley Williams for the Buttes. Mm-hmm. So those are the only two that I have for the NWHL. I'd like to get more, but when the jerseys keep changing every season, it makes it a little harder.
So. Yeah, it's funny. Just to share a quick personal story that I have a Colleen Murphy jersey, and of course she was with the Buttes last season, but she's playing with the Whale this season, and I had purchased it before the third year version of the Buttes jerseys came out. It was the second year one, and I had her autograph it, and she was like, oh, you know, I wish it was the more current one, but, you know, it is what it is, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and then speaking of Colleen Murphy and how she's playing for the Connecticut Whale, how would you rate the Connecticut Whale so far this season?
Well, especially that all five teams do make the playoffs this year with the way that the playoff format is going to go. Don't let the standings mislead you. You know, the Whale and Miri Raisinen, and I mean, that here's an Olympic goaltender for Finland. In some ways, she's been in the shadow of Noora Ratu, who's been the face of Finland, at least for their women's hockey for, oh gosh, going back, her first Olympics was 2006 in Torino. So here's Raisinen that, you know, was the backup in most instances to Ratu, and hadn't really, you know, she kind of gets overlooked in international play, but she is an elite goaltender. I mean, just really top notch. And now here she is playing for the Whale, and although, you know, their record has been maybe substandard and their performance offensively has been tough, make no mistake, she's one of the best goaltenders in the world. And then you look up front at Katarina Morozova from the Czech Republic. You know, she scored the first goal, first assist, and first point in the NWHL by a Czech-born player, and she's just been lights out awesome. She's such a fun player to watch in terms of her stick handling, her ability to spot open ice and to get into small openings and create opportunities. Just a top-notch player, you know, that she will, those two players alone will keep Connecticut into games no matter who they're facing, whether it's the Buttes, the Whitecaps, playoffs, regular season, it doesn't matter. Those are two players that any team would kill to have. And, you know, we mentioned Colleen Murphy, and you know, it's one of those things where the Whale might have signed her at the perfect time. Colleen Murphy tends to get better and better as the season progresses, and in the later season, the later stages of the season, is really at her best in terms of playing shutdown defense, and being versatile. I know last year in Buffalo, it was a real pleasure watching her play because you could put her out on the ice in any situation. I mean, she's a defender, and, you know, the Buttes were utilizing her on the power play. They had her on the penalty kill. Anytime that they were down two players and were killing a 5-on-3, Murphy was always out on the ice. So she's just one of those players that the tougher it gets, the harder it gets, and the more important the games, she really steps her game up. So, you know, signing her right now is probably a great thing, and it's going to behoove them as they head into the postseason. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do as a unit. But they certainly have talent, and they're not a team that anybody should overlook by any stretch of the imagination.
And then lastly, we have the defending champions, the Metropolitan Riveters, who kind of started off the season very rocky.
Yes. Yeah, they did. And I have, you know, my own personal theories on that. I don't think that playing Lulia at Princeton, you know, for playing in that Champions Cup, that, you know, the top team from Sweden, who arguably could arguably be the best women's hockey team in the world when we're talking about club teams, the talent that they have on there. Team captain Jenny Hurakoski is a six-time world championship medalist and a two-time Olympic medalist. They got Michelle Carvinen. So, you know, here are the Isabel Cup champions going up against this powerhouse team, one of the best in the world. And they ended up coming up short. And, I understandably, it was just an exhibition game. But, you know, I wonder, and I'm sure other people wonder, did that type of a tournament or an exhibition game do more harm than good for the Riveters? Because it just seemed they could never get over the hump from there. Once, you know, the regular season started for the NWHL, nothing seemed to go their way. And it's kind of puzzling in ways because so many of the players that are on the team have been great players for the Riveters all along and were key components in them winning the Isabel Cup last season. You look at Madison Packer, Alexa Grushow, Rebecca Russo. I mean, they've been paramount in the history of the Riveters. And then, you know, you go and you sign from Buffalo a player like Kristen Wheels Lewicki, who's arguably the fastest skater in the NWHL and a crafty player in of herself. So they certainly bolster their team, but it seems that they've just been having such a hard time getting over the hump. But I guess with that notion, they are the defending champions. They should not be taken lightly, especially when you consider who is on that team and that they were the team that pretty much brought them the trophy last season. And with all five teams making the playoffs, anything can happen. So they should not be taken lightly either, thinking that, you know, their time is come and gone, because it hasn't. They're starting to gain momentum now. They're starting to pick it up and gelling as a team. And I think the Sorokina, they acquired Maria Sorokina from the Connecticut Whale. Here's another international star player for Russia. And she's in their net. And now they have, you know, they have four proven goaltenders, and they're looking good. I think things are looking up for the Riveters is maybe the best way to put it.
All right. And then lastly, going back to the Buttes, because that's the team you see the most. Sarah, I'm going to probably mispronounce her last name, and I apologize. Sarah Edney? I hope
that's
right.
That's correct.
Awesome. Yeah. I don't suck. But she announced that she had played her last game. She's moving on to dental school, from what I understand.
Yes.
What impact will that have for the Buttes losing a player like her?
I personally think the impact will be huge. Now, you know, let me preface that by saying that the Buttes certainly have other components and other players that are able to step up and try to fill in that gap. So it's maybe it's a door that swings both ways. You know, they have, I happened to be speaking with Jackie Greco at practice last night, and she put it to me this way, is that You'd never be able to replace Edney. You know, Sarah Edney's a top player. She's an NWHL All-Star. She had two successful seasons in the CWHL they were the Brampton Thunder at the time. Now they're the Markham Thunder, and she played four successful years at Harvard University and the NCAA. And what I always liked about Edney's game is that she seemed to have a perfect balance of offense and defense, and she could be pretty freewheeling. She wasn't afraid to take chances. There was numerous instances last year where she would jump up into the rush, but she also didn't shirk her defensive responsibilities too. So she just a top-notch player. She was an alternate captain last season and widely respected not only in the Buttes locker room but in league-wide. So when you put it like that, she's not a player that you're going to be able to replace or fill her skates, so to speak, because she was that, you know, that earnest, that tremendous work ethic for a particular player. So that part's going to be tough. Now, in saying that, there's players like a Jackie Greco, who's a defender forward for Buffalo, and she was a member of the 16-17 Isabel Cup winning team. It's her third season with the league. Then you get a player like Jordan Burns. I mean, Jordan Burns, another member of that 16-17 Butte squad. That was her rookie season. She, like Greco, was another third-year Butte. And Jordan Burns hasn't even gotten into a regular season game this season. She was an All-Star last year, and the Buttes roster is so chock-full of talent and so deep that she hasn't even been able to break the regular season lineup. So I think you can rest assured that, all right, you lost Sarah Edney. She's moving on to other things in her life and her career, but you have players like a Jordan Burns and a Jackie Greco that can be inserted into the lineup and then complement the other defenders that are already in place. Jordan Burns, people forget too, she's an NCAA champion. I mean, she played at the University of Minnesota and I think won at least one NCAA championship, if not two. So you got these players like that you can insert into the Buttes defense corps. And on top of that, you know, they're so strong as it is. The other defenders, Blake Bolden, Lisa Chesson, Sarah Casarso, Emily Falzer, Savannah Harmon, you know, they've played in all 10 games as defenders for the Buttes. Neither one of them has, none of them have sat out a regular season game yet. So that's huge in and of itself, that their talent is so strong and so deep on the blue line that it's hard, that an all-star like Jordan Burns hasn't even been able to crack the lineup yet. But with Edney out, I think you'll see Burns and Greco both inserted in, and they'll continue to flourish.
All right. Now, that's going to end the women's hockey talk for right now. But, Nate, you're going to be sticking around. Because, Steve, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You didn't fall asleep?
No, not at all. It was great hearing about this.
All right, good. That's what we want to hear. So, Steve, we're going to rotate over to you for a little bit, and then obviously, Nate, if you got questions that you want to ask, Steve, go for it.
Most assuredly.
Because now we're going to do a little Toronto Maple Leafs talk. I know everyone's thinking, like, wait, this is a DC-based podcast, and there's not even a talk about the Capitals. We'll get there. Maybe. It's a hockey show. Get over it. But, Steve, since we've last talked on the show, the big thing now is that William Nylander has signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He got a 6-year deal.
Yep.
I still think he's going to get traded. What yes. type of impact has he had on the Toronto Maple Leafs since he's come back?
See, it's kind of been mixed. A lot of people are like, well, he hasn't been given the opportunity because for the first few games he was playing with on the third line with Kadri and Brown, which isn't the greatest offensive players. But the last four or so games he's been moved up with Matthews, and Babcock has told him that I'm giving you every opportunity to succeed, and he's really, really done nothing. He scored a goal, but he hasn't like provided anything. He still looks a little slow on the jump. He's still the same afraid little boy who's afraid to go into the corners. And his passing ability has seemed to disappear. He's kind of brought Matthews down a little bit. And it's kind of been a little disheartening to see. Kapanen, who has been like the guy, kind of guy who's been go, go, go all season, he's been pushing and pushing and pushing, but he's been demoted multiple times by Babcock, and Nylander being promoted, and it's kind of a little mess right now. But Dubas being made comments about not trading him as long as he was in power. I'm not sure how much I believe those, especially if there comes a defender along that could be made available for the right price. So Nylander has had almost a zero impact on the team. He's probably had a negative impact on some of the players.
So I'm actually pulling up Nylander's stats real quick. In 14 games played, William Nylander has 1 goal, 2 assists for 3 points, and is a negative 2.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to backtrack real quick, because I need, for a comparison, because I actually saw this comparison, I actually laughed. I thought it was hilarious. Tom Wilson, in 23 games, if everyone remembers, he missed the first 16 due to suspension, and then missed an additional 3 due to a concussion.
Yep.
23 games played, 13 goals, 8 assists, 21 points, and a plus 12.
Yep. And
so both of these guys missed the beginning part of the season.
Yep.
One's having an impact and one's not.
And it's really interesting because you figure nothing to take away anything away from the Capitals, but the Leafs were the highest scoring team at one point.
And that was before Nylander was in, because
Exactly. And
I really like Kasperi Kapanen on that first line with Austin Matthews, because I felt that that was one of the reasons why they're scoring so much.
I agree. Kapanen doesn't do – I wrote about this as an article on TXHT that Kapanen doesn't do anything crazy good, but he does everything right, and the speed sets him apart. And so he goes to the corners. He's not afraid to do that. He's having a decent shot. And he just complements Matthews so perfectly, so Matthews can put himself in places to score goals, which is what he is supposed to do. Nylander, on the other hand, it's the same old story from last season. And when the Bruins took him apart in the playoffs, it was Nylander won't go to the corners. He's afraid to be hit. And then I also think that the whole contract situation has kind of tore apart between him and his teammates. They won't admit it, but I think it has. So I think in the next coming months, I'm leaning more towards the draft, because I think they just won't sign him and trade him that quickly, unless something huge comes up. But I'm thinking maybe in the draft they'll look at some offers and see if they can move him so that they can keep Kapanen and Johnson and stuff like that.
Yeah, because, like, let's keep this in perspective. You have 5 weeks until the trade deadline.
Yep.
And then you have the draft. You have to re-sign Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Mitch Marner.
Yep.
Jake Gardner.
Yep.
And I'm forgetting, who was the other big name that they got to re-sign?
There's a few more. Hyman's on there. Brown's on there. Kapanen's on there.
Yeah, Kapanen was the fourth. That was the fourth big one that I was.
Yeah.
So like, you got to re-sign those four guys because those are the key guys. Like, you got Rick and Riley locked up to that 8-year deal. You got Tavares on the 7-year deal. Marlowe's got 1 year left on his deal. Marlowe could be an interesting factor.
Yes.
Contract wise, do you think he could be a guy who gets traded?
So there's been a lot of talk going around for a long time that when he signed with Toronto, he signed with Toronto for one last-ditch effort to win a cup. And the idea was that if they ever decided to trade his contract, that he wanted to go back to San Jose, which San Jose had always wanted to keep him in the first place.
It's a one-team, no-trade clause.
Yeah.
So, it's like, I'm only going back to San Jose. I will not play for anyone else.
Exactly. And so I think unless he's paid all his money up front, he's making the cap hit is 6.25, but he's really making $1 million a season for the next two. well, for next year, and then so it's always possibility. The problem is, though, is that I think Babcock sees Marlowe as somebody who's kind of brought the team together. He's really taken Matthews and Marner under his wing and kind of, you know, made them feel right at home. And I think that'll, like, he's hoping that'll help Matthews and Marner's contract a little bit. But Marlowe is a very interesting case because he could very well hit 20 goals again this season, which would be unreal. And he's an Iron Man. He hasn't been hurt in at least 4 or 5 years.
You better knock on wood for that one.
Yeah, seriously, I should. we have enough injuries. But, you know, it's one of those interesting things. And Dubis is over in Russia right now, scouting 2 Russian players. So I think come next season, it might be a different Leafs team you look at, depending on, like, what happens with the whole Nylander situation.
Now, Frederik Andersen, I heard that he's currently out with a groin injury or lower body injury, however they want to bill it. He's slated, I believe they said that Saturday against Boston, they're slated to have him back in between the pipes. How valuable has he been for the Leafs so far this season?
Well, you've seen in the last 3 games since 2019, we've been shuttled twice and by big leads, like 5-0 and then 4-0 against Nashville. And then even when we won against Vancouver, like, we had to block so many shots because Hutchinson is just not an NHL goalie. And Andersen has been the rock that allows the Leafs to play offensively. I think without him, this team is nothing more than a team barely making the playoffs. And that says a lot for me because I think we have a lot of stars on this team. But that trade with Anaheim has spoke volumes about what goaltending means to a team that is very defensively deficient.
Yeah, and just to throw this out there, standings-wise in the Atlantic Division, obviously you have the Tampa Bay Lightning, who's head and shoulders above everybody else in the league at a 33-8-2 record with 68 points. Yep. Behind them is Toronto with 27-13-2 for 56 points. And then Boston has 43 games, has 25 wins, 14 losses, 4 overtime points for 54 points. And then you got Buffalo and Montreal, like, literally points behind them.
Yeah.
With 52 and 51 respectively. And then Florida's 41 points, Detroit, Ottawa, they ain't making the playoffs. But but that kind of gives you the perspective of, like, that's just how close it is. And then, like, if you look at the Metro Division, the Capitals have 56 points.
Yeah.
Top of the division, but 2 points behind them is Pittsburgh with 54. 5 points behind them is Columbus with 51. And then 6 points behind is the Islanders with 50. And then you got the Hurricanes with 45 and the Rangers with 41. Obviously, the Devils and the Flyers aren't going to make the playoffs unless.
Yeah.
I think my dad said, because my dad's a Flyers fan, he was actually at the Caps Flyers game last night. and he was saying that it's like the Flyers can only lose, well, before last night's game, they could only lose 9 games.
Yeah.
To have a hope of making the playoffs.
Yeah, now that number is
they can only lose 8 games.
Jeez. And we're not even at the midpoint yet.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so, you know, even in the Metro Division, like, you know, hey, Caps fans, yeah, we're at the top of the division. It ain't safe.
No, not at all.
You know, just like what you're saying with Toronto, it ain't safe. You got the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
You know, nipping at the... You got the Montreal Canadiens, who everyone thought was going to be putrid this season.
Yep.
You know, surprising people right now.
Yeah.
So... And, you know, let's get Nate back into this conversation. Nate, what are your thoughts on how the Sabres have been so far this season?
Well, I in some ways I hate to admit it, but so, you know, I'm a Buffalo boy, born and raised, and have been attending Sabres games since their days at the Odd, and this was the first time at the beginning of the season I ever actually walked out of a Sabres game and didn't stay. It was when they played the first game of the season against the Avalanche, and it was, I'm sorry, not the first game of the season, but early in the season against the Colorado Avalanche, and just got schooled. And I'm like, oh gosh, it's going to be another repeat of the most recent seasons. And it's been the total opposite of that. I mean, the buzz, especially when you look at the way that Jeff Skinner has been playing. I mean, gosh, 30 goals, just about 30 goals, he had 29 within the 43 games this season. I mean, what more can you say about him? And, you know, I know Jack Eichel's been hurt past couple of games and hasn't done a whole lot, or has been able to do a whole lot because of his injury. I think in the New Year's Eve game against the Islanders, he skated a few shifts and then had to come out. But that combination up front, Eichel, Skinner, and Sam Reinhart, has just been phenomenal. And there's a buzz again, finally, for the first time in, you know, probably about three or four seasons, a positive buzz around Buffalo that this team's going to make the playoffs. You know, going into the year, we were just hoping that they were going to be entertaining and fun to watch again, no matter how they did by season's end. But now there's actually belief that they're going to make it in for the first time in quite a long stretch.
And how does that scare you, Steve, as a Maple Leafs guy?
Well, so I went to a Buffalo game in Buffalo against Toronto, where Matthews scored the overtime winner. And I remember sitting there with a few of my buddies, and I was saying, damn, this team is good. Like, I watched Jeff Skinner, and I was like, they got this guy for a second-round draft pick. This is unreal. And Rasmus Dahlin and Ristolainen, and, like, it scares me, because if we get them in the first round, it'll be a great series. But they could very easily take anybody out in the first round. Like, it doesn't matter where they sit in the standings. Like, even Tampa Bay be scared. Because
Tampa Bay is just worried about getting that President's Trophy.
Yeah, that's all they're doing right now. The thing is, every year Tampa Bay, well, the last few seasons, Tampa Bay has won the President's Trophy almost. Or came really high in the standings.
Yeah, Nashville got it last season.
Yeah, Nashville got it last season. But, like, Tampa's been up there every season in one of the top teams is, but like, first round comes around, second round comes around, and they're just like, what happened?
The Capitals happened, baby. That's what. Well, this time we got to happen.
But that's the thing, though. It doesn't matter where you sit in the standings. Like, when it comes to playoff time, that's a whole nother level. And, like, I watched them play in the regular season, and it looks like Eichel's jacked up, and Reinhardt is as good as I, like, thought he's been in, like, the last few years. And then my favorite, Casey Mittelstadt, has been freaking good in his rookie year. Like, he's been really good. And it's scary for me and exciting for Buffalo. Because who knows? It's either we get Boston or we get Buffalo, and that's scary.
Yeah. And speaking about scary, we all saw that what got released today, right?
What's that, Michael?
What was it?
Those god-awful all-star jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. The NWHL did a much better job, and I didn't really like what they did for them this season either.
No.
So he did fail again.
Whoever's bright idea was to do black and white jerseys only, please show yourself the door, because God damn it, they're bad. And Dixon's probably now listening to this point, and he's just like laughing maniacally. Because, like, Nate, you mentioned that you collect jerseys. I collect jerseys. Dixon's our jersey aficionado. I mean, we let him do a full hour episode on all the Adidas jerseys when they're unveiled. So I just want to slap my head against this desk, but the problem is that I'll probably break this dinner tray that my laptop's on, and the entire podcast will just be crashing at that point. But
it was so ugly.
It reminds me of when, and this is how bad these uniforms are. Remember when they first started the Reebok deal and they did those blackout jerseys for all the teams?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And how god-awful those were?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think they did. I think they took the Reebok blackout and went, hey, this idea sucked, but it sold, so let's do it for an all-star game.
Well, my understanding is what apparently Adidas kind of like said something that they were trying to, before they showed the jerseys, they were trying to essentially copy the North America jersey almost from the Olympics, or when the North American team played, and it was like, it doesn't look anything like it. It looks terrible.
You have failed.
I was like, oh,
miserably.
God. So bad.
Do you know what looks better than these all-star jerseys? The Kelowna Ice jersey that Nate's wearing in his profile picture here on Skype. You know what?
Well, thank you.
You know what? I hate the Capitol Stadium Series jersey from last season so much, but I'll even admit that that looks better than the All-Star jerseys this season. And I'm not going to lie, like, I super love the Toronto Maple Leafs jerseys for the Stadium Series.
Yeah, my favorite. Can't find them anywhere, though.
The all-white look was beautiful. I love that so much. All right, we're now turning this last segment into Let's Just Nerd Out About Stupid Stuff segment. Because at the end of the day, when we talk about it, we're freaking nerds. So let's just nerd out now.
I'm down.
But yeah, no, those Toronto uniforms were awesome. Actually, we should be seeing what the Flyers and the Penguins are going to be wearing next month in the Stadium Series at Lincoln Field.
Yeah,
we should be seeing something soon. Unless they're just going to wear their third jerseys, because that's essentially what they wore the last time they played in the Stadium Series.
Yeah, that's basically what they wore.
No, that is what they wore.
They were ugly.
And then, what was it? Actually, going back to the Winter Classic, which was, actually, that was a really good game, actually, watching the Winter Classic between Chicago and Boston.
Yeah, it was.
First off, Boston's uniforms, fantastic. Like, loved them. Chicago, what the hell, man? We went from a whiteout by Toronto to a blackout by Chicago.
I liked the black jerseys. They weren't bad.
See,
just those ones, though.
Remember the very first Winter Classic that Chicago played in? I think it was, 2009?
Yeah.
And they wore those black uniforms?
Yeah, the black with the red and yellow, whatever.
Yeah. That jersey, I loved it.
Yeah, it was nice.
Was a beautiful jersey for the Blackhawks that I wish they could bring back.
Yeah, I think more often than not, the Blackhawks tend to have their jersey variations tend to be the best league-wide in general.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Oh, yeah. And now that the Capitals made the wise decision of bringing back their retro red as their third, hopefully makes it their official home jersey moving forward, I really am glad that, like, a lot of the retro jerseys are back, and I really like that. I like the look for the Capitals with the retro style. I like the look for the Islanders with their retro look, although they really need to bring back the Fisherman jersey.
That was amazing.
I know. Like, that was, like, if you're a kid, you love that jersey. I'm still trying to get one for my collection. So, but, and then you look at the Oilers. I hate their orange jerseys. I'm really happy that they're most likely going back to the Navy uniforms next season. You know, I like what the Kings are doing with their current jerseys, because it's almost like a throwback to the 90s when Gretzky was with them. I really like that design. I like the Leafs jerseys. I like how they went back to the, like, 60s style, the logo.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I like them much better.
You know, and that's the great thing about the original six teams, that is, with them, you're not going to get a lot of change.
No.
And I really like that about them. I like the Flyers retro look, but I hate their third jerseys.
Yeah.
Just as much as my father hates Gritty.
Yeah, I'm not a Gritty fan either.
Yeah.
My dad still hopes somebody lights him on fire. because it is Philly after all at the end of the day.
Right.
But, oh, man. I'm trying to blank. All right. You know what? All right. Are we done nerding out because we're nerds?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks for your approval, Nate. Done nerding. All right. So last bit of business. We do have about like 9.5 minutes. Can't be a DC-based podcast if it doesn't talk about the Capitals. So, bring out my card of notes because I want to talk about the Capitals special teams. Because let's be honest, the Capitals power play has been very weak these last several games, scoring only 2 power play goals on, like, I think it's like 35 power plays now, which is not very good. Which is not very good compared to how they're like almost like 75% to start the season. In like the first 10 games, how the power play was just on fire. The Capitals power play now ranks, as of last night, going into the Flyer game, it was ranked 11th overall. I think the biggest problem with the Capitals power play, and you guys can chime in on this, whether you agree or not, is I think that the Capitals power play is just way too predictable.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen with the Capitals power play. And yeah, a lot of other teams like Tampa Bay, Colorado, and a few others, they emulate the Capitals power play to a T. But the Capitals is just a little too predictable to the point where, you know, it's like, okay, Kuznetsov's going to get it under in the corner. He's going to do his thing with it. Backstrom's going to have it at the hash mark. You know, Carlson will be at the point. Ovi will be in his office. Oshie will be in front. I'd like to see the Capitals mix it up a bit. You know, I really like to see them shake it up. I'd like to see Tom Wilson on the power play. You know, could you imagine having, you know, changing it up a little bit where you have both Tom Wilson and TJ Oshie in front of the net crashing?
Mm-hmm.
How much chaos that's going to bring to a goaltender and to a defense? Like,
yeah,
you got to do something drastic like that to change the look of how your power play is going to play. You could still keep Carlson and Ovechkin and Backstrom or Kuznetsov doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
But change up certain elements of it. You know, maybe put, you know, have, like, I like how from time to time they'll have Ovechkin and Carlson rotate with each other. That's good. But you got to create something that's not going to make it predictable all the time. So, but then the penalty kill, on the other hand, which was hurting for a good while, and I think a big attribute to that was the fact that Brooks Orpik was out injured due to knee surgery, the penalty kill has been on the rise for the Washington Capitals. I don't think they've given up a power play, or if they have given up a power play goal, it's been one out of a lot of games at this point. They're not giving up those power play goals like the way they were, you know, three, four weeks ago. Now it's a lot better. It's more sturdy. It's more stable. So it's actually really nice. You know, it's good to see that. And I definitely think the attribute to that is Brooks Orpik, because he's like your top penalty killer. He's your top shot blocker. He does those little things that helps out. And
very underrated player.
Oh yeah, greatest move by Brian McClellan is trading him to Colorado. Greatest move Joe Sakic ever did was buy him out, and the greatest move Brian McClellan ever did after that was to re-sign him.
That was the craziest like 2-3 days ever. I was like, what is happening?
Well, actually, no, that wasn't 2-3 days. Remember, Philip Grubauer and Brooks Orpik were traded to the Colorado Avalanche at the draft.
Yeah.
And I think it was like for a third round pick. Then before free agency, Colorado bought out Brooks Orpik. Brooks Orpik didn't sign with the Capitals until like a couple, like I think 2 or 3 weeks after July 1st.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So it wasn't a matter of 2 to 3 days. But yeah, I watch. Next CBA, you ain't going to be able to do that.
No, I feel like that was a plan. Like, it was kind of like, you take Grubauer and Orpik, buy out Orpik, and then we'll figure it out from there.
Yeah. There's a reason there was only a third-round draft pick moved over to the Capitals. But, you know, that's an interesting talk about the CBA. Obviously, Steve, you're in Toronto. Nate, you're in Buffalo. So you guys get a lot of Hockey Night in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, I love Hockey Night in Canada so much.
Born and raised on it.
Yeah, John Cherry may be over the hill, but you may get a gem or two every now and then. But the key thing that I love about it is Saturday headlines, the second intermission, and Berkey's take, which is the first intermission of the West Coast game.
Yeah.
I just started watching Berkey's take this season, and like, why haven't I been watching this all along? Because it's really good. And anyone who wants to learn hockey, watch the Hockey Night in Canada stuff. You'll actually learn hockey.
It's true.
But for headlines, one of the things that has been talked about, especially from Nick Kiprios, your buddy, Steve, is that it sounds like this upcoming CBA, I mean, yeah, there's escrow that the NHLPA wants to work on. Mm. It sounds like we could get an extension and we're not going to have a lockout.
Yeah, there's...
I mean, it's a little early.
Yeah.
But it's kind of floating both stuff ways. Is promising.
Yeah. It's kind of floating both ways right now. Like, Elliot Friedman said at one point he was kind of unsure if there would be a start to the season next year. But then about 4 or 5 days later, I was watching Sportsnet again, and Kiprios and Friedman were on there, and they both had said that it seems like it's leaning more towards the season will start on time. Yeah. So it's kind of right now in the ground, but I think the thing that's going to be a little bit of a difficulty to jump over is going to be the Olympics part.
Which they shouldn't even be allowed to go.
I agree with you.
And I'm sorry to all the people who are listening going, ah, oh, pitchforks, knives, go after Mike. Here's the thing. And I actually found the articles, and they're beautifully written articles by Nick Kosnicka. I think I mispronounced his last name. I apologize, Nick. But he wrote two really great articles. Not the summer of 2018, but the summer of 2017. About why it doesn't work for the NHL to shut down their league for essentially a month to go to the Olympics. Number one, NBC owns the rights to all the footage for the Olympics. So the NHL can't even use that to promote the global side of the game.
Yep.
That fact alone just hurts it. So why would you do it? And then not only that, but ask the New York Islanders how they felt about John Tavares blowing out his knee when they were making a playoff push.
Seriously.
They did not make the playoffs because they lost their best player because of the Olympics.
Yep.
And if you want to hear my rant on that, that rant is saved somewhere in the archive. Dig it out.
All right.
I think it's in season two during the off-season stuff.
I also think, too, I don't know about anybody else, but I found the Olympics, the last Olympics, to be more exciting. There was more parody. Like, as a Canadian, and I know this is not true all the time, but the expectation as Canadians is you're going there to win. Because it's Canadian sport kind of thing and, like, all this kind of stuff. And, like, now the expectation is you're going to go there and you're going to have to fight for everything.
And, Germany. Like,
Every team can win. Like, it's no longer like we have a full roster of NHL players and we're going to play shutdown hockey the whole time, because that's what the Canadians did.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. You know, I'm probably a little bit older than you guys, and you know, you think of, there was such a long stretch until 98 in Nagano, you didn't have NHL players in the Olympics, so we got by for a long stretch without it. You know, and we can get by without it again. You know, I think it's exciting to see, especially when you think of like the Miracle on Ice team for USA, and those are all college age kids going up against guys that were, you know, in some instances could have been, you know, old enough to be their dad, you know, not that old, but still, you know, going up against top players in the world. And I don't know. I think it adds a unique flavor to it that you don't necessarily get with the Olympics if NHL players are playing.
Yeah. Now, not only that, but here's the other thing. 98 was in Nagano, Japan. 2002 was in Salt Lake City, Utah. 2004 was in Torino, if I remember that correctly. 2010, that's right, yeah. 2006 was Torino. 2010 was Vancouver. 2014 was Sochi.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Which ones had the good ratings and which one had the bad ratings for the hockey?
Well, I remember near Vancouver with Miller and Crosby.
The good ratings was exclusively the Salt Lake City and the Vancouver.
Yep.
Because
that makes sense.
Because it was in the United States and it was in Canada, and that's all that people cared about.
Right.
Yeah.
When it was in Japan, which was an utter disaster, if anyone knows about the history of the NHL going to the 98 Olympics, oh my God, that was a dumpster fire, because half of the players that were supposed to go over to play, by the time they got there, their teams were eliminated.
Yeah.
Like, Ole Kolzig played in a one of those regulation games after Germany was eliminated.
Right. So. And I think, who was it, Ruslan Fedotenko, that ended up playing, like, a single game for Ukraine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I think Peter Bondra was allowed to leave early so he could play for Slovakia to help him try to get into the medal round. And then Richard Zednik, I think, only played one game, and that was after they had been eliminated, too, I believe.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Like, 98 was, and then there's also the U.S. team trashing the hotel.
Right. Yeah, and it's tough too. Like, even recently with Pyeongchang, I mean, it's here the games are in South Korea, and the time difference and everything like that. I think some people that were, you know, at least moderately interested didn't tune in, or were less inclined to tune in, one, because of the time difference, and two, well, if there's not NHL players in there, why am I going to stay up to some, you know, awful hour to see it's a game over in South Korea, I think was...
Because you got you know, Germany versus the athletes from Russia.
Right.
Or right. Olympians from Russia.
Who had Kovalchuk.
Yeah, and Datsyuk.
Yep. Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, so it's like you still had some NHL talent in there. But right. But seriously though, but you know, as Steve also mentioned, parity. You got Germany in the gold medal game.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, like I always root for Germany in the World Cup of Soccer.
Right.
That's just my team. So like obviously naturally I'm rooting for Germany in hockey. I also root for Slovakia in hockey because Peter Bondra was my childhood hero.
Right.
And a lot of people also forget 2014 Olympics Sochi. Peter Bondra was their general manager for Slovakia. Yep. And they played in the bronze medal game.
It's true.
Yeah.
Nobody saw that. Nobody.
Right.
And that was with NHL players too, but I and here's the thing: they're going to try. I know that the NHL is trying to do this push for the 2022 games in China. But
yeah,
here's the thing: the model that the NHL is going with, which is we're going to do these European global we're just going to do these global series games where we play games in China, we play games in Europe, we play games in Russia.
So stupid.
The NHL. Yeah. No, that's the smart thing. Because remember what I said, NBC owns all the rights to all the Olympic footage, and the NHL does not have the right or the permission to use it.
Well, it's good for the NHL revenue.
So for the NHL to go around, send their teams, their superstars to these countries, that's how you're going to grow the game. Because not only that, but now the NHL has the footage to say, this is what we did in China. This is what we got to do in Switzerland. This is what we got to do in Germany.
Oh, sure.
And that helps grow it.
Yeah, you can definitely use that for their own, you know, I guess you could say, for lack of a better word, propaganda purposes, and showing what they're doing to grow the game and whatnot. I personally am not a huge fan of the overseas games. I think, you know, at the very least, jet lag alone has an impact on the players, and going over to another time zone, another country, and things like that. And, you know, you want to have, I guess I like the idea of having the games in our own backyard and on home soil between, you know, on North America, although it's great for diplomacy and, you know, giving a treat to foreign nations. I'm totally fine with that. But think about the players and the league itself. I guess I'm more of the mindset of let's keep it on North American soil.
Hey, well, they're making money doing it. And for the jet lag thing, hey, come on now. Caps got Caps, Sabres, and Maple Leafs got to all travel out west to California to play those teams, and they got to travel here. That 3-hour time difference can't kick your butt too. So, luckily for me, I was able to find a way to combat that. So,
yeah, that was tough.
No, I actually went out. You know, non-hockey related. I went out there for a Power Rangers convention because, you know, nerd, and. The convention was in Los Angeles, so I actually did this mind trick to myself where when I got there, whatever time it was when I got there, which was actually like 11 o'clock in the morning, that's what time it was. I didn't think about what time it was where I was at home.
Right.
Like here in Maryland. And then, but the day I was leaving California, I was saying to myself when I woke up in the morning, it's 8 o'clock in the morning where I'm at. It's my flight leaves at 12 p.m. Eastern, you know, so like I was doing all that to myself. So I actually never dealt with jet lag coming back. So neat little trick for you guys.
Mind over matter.
Yeah, exactly. It's a mind over matter thing. I did it for myself. It worked for me. I'm a freak, so it's okay. But gentlemen, I do appreciate your time coming on TXHT, Serious Hockey Talk for Serious Hockey Fans. But before we sign off, real quick, Steve, we'll start with you. Where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can check me out on Facebook, Steve Gardner, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Gardski. And yeah, ask me some questions.
And then Nate, where can the people find you, my good friend?
Most often on Twitter. My handle is at Nathaniel, N-A-T-H-A-N-I-E-L, letter A for my middle initial, and then O-L-I-V-R. There wasn't enough room to put the E in there. So Nathaniel A. Oliver, essentially, minus the E.
All right. And then, of course, real quick, I just want to do one shout-out. This week is the one-year anniversary of my best friend Manta passing. Last week was actually his birthday. So, Mansa, I love you. I miss you. I promise I'm not crying. There's a tear coming down my eye. But we there's a whole bunch of us that love you and miss you, Mansa. We won't forget you. Hopefully soon I can get the permission to release the content that you and I worked on together so everyone can relish in what we got to work on together with MCW Pro Wrestling. With that, you can follow everything for TXHT off of our website, txhthockey.com. Steve has stuff coming up soon. I got some stuff coming up soon on the website. Shaggy with his NWHL stuff, mostly the Connecticut Whale. That will be coming up soon as well. So, Nate, Steve, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, very much appreciated. Glad to be here.
And ladies and gentlemen, until next time, we will see you on the ice.